Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Got some breaking news. Consumer debt hits an astronomical level that we have not seen since 2007. We know that that ended with the GFC. Will we see the same outcome today in 2022? Let's dive right into the article. This is from Reuters. U.S. household debt increased by $1 trillion in 2021 alone, the biggest increase since 2007. And I know a lot of you are saying, well, George, that's because home prices are so high. That doesn't make it good. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't worry about it. But it's not just home prices. Let's get into the article. So U.S. consumer debt grew by the largest in 14 years, people ramped up borrowing to afford homes, cars, basically because prices are going up for everything. People have to borrow more money in order to buy those things where the prices are continually rising. And I think one thing that's interesting is we saw the savings just go through the roof and the amount of dollars that were on the balance sheet of the non-bank entities in the real economy. That really skyrockets. And we saw incomes go up in 2020 and in 2021 when you look at them in aggregate total. But what's happening now is the reason we saw all this was because of the government deficit spending. This was PPP. This was stimmy checks. This was the mortgage forbearance. This was the eviction moratorium, the child tax credit. This all put more and more money into people's pocket. They put it into the bank. But now what's happening is because the spigot is running dry, people are having to access that savings to go ahead and pay their bills. So the savings is drawing down slightly. People are compensating for the lack of quote unquote free money coming in from the government by putting things on their credit card. So that's not good, especially when the reason they're debt is increasing isn't necessarily because they're buying more stuff. It's just simply because the price of that stuff is a lot higher. In fact, they could be buying less stuff. But if the price goes up, then you're still going to see a significant increase to the amount of debt. So first highlighted point is what we were saying about $1 trillion. The debt has increased. I mean, that's an astronomical amount. The total debt balance is now $1.4 trillion higher than it was at the end of 2019 or at the beginning of the Cerveza sickness. So at the beginning of the Cerveza sickness, we had $1.4 trillion less in debt today. And what we've gone through is a global pandemic, locking people in a cage, closing or forcing hundreds of thousands of small and mid-sized businesses to go bust. We're producing far, far less than we produced in 2019, which, as you guys know, is a measurement of wealth. It's how efficiently an economy, a society, can produce goods and services. So we are producing less, but yet our debt is $1.4 trillion higher. That is obviously unsustainable, but it also shows us that the economy is incredibly unsound when you look under the hood. Over $4.5 trillion in mortgages were originated in 2021, reaching a historic high for the database, which goes back to 1999. So keep in mind, guys, that includes 2007. So when you include 2006, 2007, 2005, the amount of mortgages or the value of the mortgages originated was higher in 2021 than at the peak of the last housing bubble. Mortgage balances increased by $258 billion in the fourth quarter alone to a total of $10.93 trillion at the end of December. Now you may say, okay, well, at least it's homes. Then, you know, people are making money. That's some people may look at it as an asset. They're increasing their purchasing power. Maybe, maybe not. Let's look at this next category. Auto loans originations returned to pre-pandemic trends, but loan amounts increased in response to the total debt goes up to a substantial degree. This is according to the New York Fed. As car prices have soared, buyers have borrowed more to finance the additional cost. Now, one thing I want to do quickly is think through what this does to the money supply. It really kind of is this doom loop or a doom vortex, as I call it sometimes in my whiteboard videos, where higher prices lead to more debt being created, or the nominal amount of the debt being created, even if it's the same amount of loans, still the total amount for those loans going up. And you guys know how dollars are actually created in the account in the economy, with the exception of the government's deficit spending. And that's by banks, commercial banks, lending money into existence. They lend dollars into existence, right? So if they're lending more because housing prices are going up, what is that doing? Now, all else being equal, so assuming nothing else changed, if they're lending more, creating higher price or higher or loans with a higher dollar amount, and even if it's for the same amount of houses, right? Even if those loans are for higher values, that means that there's more dollars being created. If there's more dollars being created, there's more dollars in the real economy chasing goods or services. Therefore, you see prices go up, and that makes home prices go up as well. That's the doom loop, or the kind of feedback loop that I was referring to. So the home prices go up, therefore the amount of loans, or the loans in aggregate total go up. The value of loans go up. That means more dollars are being created, which adds more upward pressure to home prices. So keep in mind, guys, if this was something that was happening and our economy was producing more stuff, I really wouldn't be bothered with that. That's fine. We're getting richer because we're producing more stuff. Therefore, if the debt is increasing at a similar rate to the increase in productivity, then fine. You would expect it to. But what's happening is the opposite. The amount of stuff we're producing is going down, but the amount of debt we are taking on to our balance sheets is increasing. So then the next question becomes, how do people pay off their debt? Well, through income. Okay. Well, how is the income going up if we're producing less stuff, goods and services? And then you have to remember, oh, that's right. The incomes are going up because of government deficit spending, or the incomes went up because of government deficit spending. So then the question becomes, is that sustainable? And you guys know the answer to that. And it might be kind of sustainable, where they could kick the can down the road if we were in a low inflation environment. I'm just talking about the headline CPI. The headline CPI is under 2%. The government can spend $5 trillion a lot easier with deficit spending than they can spend $5 trillion in deficit spending if the headline CPI is at 7%, or, you know, 7.5, 7.8, if it's continuing to go up. Even if it flatlines or goes back down to 6% or something like that, still, it's a much different story for the government to come out, or it's a much different motivation. You know, either their motivation would be different. Well, their motivation might be the same, but their ability to execute their plan would be severely hampered, I think is the best way that I can say it, if the rate of inflation is above 2% compared to the rate of inflation being under 2%, because they know that extra $5 trillion in deficit spending is most likely going to exacerbate the inflation problem, which means a lower probability of them being elected. And at the end of the day, that is their number one goal. So how can incomes not go down if the government isn't involved as far as deficit spending and we are producing less stuff? The amount of income created or earned by Americans in aggregate total should be going down right now. And I think it could be a matter of time. And then you say, okay, well, that decreases the demand side, right? But what does that do to the supply side? So I don't think that gets us out of the inflationary problem as far as consumer price inflation, but that just creates a different set of dynamics that we have to pay attention to.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today.
So in a sign that consumers are returning to their pre-pandemic spending habits, credit card balances also increased by 52. Oh, great. So home loans, the size, the amount of debt taken on to buy homes up, the amount of debt taken on to buy cars up, the amount of debt from credit card spending, which is consumer spending or consumption, I should say, increased by $52 billion in the fourth quarter alone. Again, think about that. We're producing less incomes, if not for the government, in aggregate total, should be going down. But the amount of debt payments that we are committing to long into the future are going up. That marked the largest quarterly increase observed in the history of the data. Wow, I didn't realize that. But the credit card balances are still lower than they were in 2019. Yeah, but again, we're producing less stuff. So if you had a ratio of productivity to consumer, well, credit card debt, let me put it that way, then I think that ratio would have been a lot more healthy. I mean, that's not the word, but less bad in 2019 than it was today, potentially. Households in aggregate have so far been loads and delinquencies remain low, thanks in part, to savings accumulated earlier in the pandemic by what? Again, stimmy checks, PPP, and forbearance programs, and the child tax credit, the forbearance programs. Their expenses go down, their incomes go up, and a lot of that also, I would argue, is a result of asset prices like the stock market and cryptocurrency going up. This creates more purchasing power for them above and beyond what they are producing. And if you're consuming far more than you produce at some point in time, that doesn't work anymore. That is unsustainable. And unfortunately, you say, well, George, why don't we just keep kicking the can down the road? Because as we kick the can down the road, there is no free lunch. We just make matters worse. And whatever collapse we have, we're just making that inevitable collapse bigger and bigger and bigger. We're just going to be diving off of a higher platform into the same shallow water. The share of disposable income that households spend on rent, loan payments, taxes, and other bills low. Well, right, it's low because they're using the data from the BEA. My memory serves me right. The Bureau of Economic Analysis. They're the ones that determine incomes. And sure, the disposable income, the ratio of what they're spending on these loan payments and taxes and household rent and whatnot, compared to their income, might be at a low level. But that's because their income is artificially high, way high. And so if their income was back what it was in 2019, I would argue, or I would be surprised if this dynamic was still at play. In fact, I would be surprised if they didn't have less disposable income, far less disposable income based on their rent, their loan payments, and taxes, because all three of those expenses have gone up tremendously. So what does this mean? I think this is one thing that the yield curve is sniffing out. We've been talking about that quite extensively on this channel. And I think for us in the Rebel Capitalist Pro community, or any friends that you're talking to, family members that you want to give them some good advice, but they might not have a high degree of economic, not intelligence, I don't want to say that word, but economic understanding due to the fact that they might not know the lingo, or they might not have done much research, or you know, they've got other things to do. I would tell those people, just watch the 10-year treasury staying relatively the same, or if you see the spread between Fed funds and the U.S. 10-year treasury decreasing, that's bad. That means that there's a higher and higher probability that we get a recession. And if we invert the one-year, the two-year, and the 10-year, if we get an inverted yield curve, then it's almost 100% chance that we get a recession within the next year, year and a half. But on the flip side of that coin, if the Fed starts raising rates, and if the 10-year treasury goes up at the same rate, so as an example, the 10-year treasury, I think today trading at 1.9, if the Fed takes rates from Fed funds from 0 to 1%, and if the 10-year treasury goes from 1.9% to 2.9%, again, it goes up at the same pace or at the same rate that the Fed funds is going up, then the probability of us going into recession is incredibly low. Because if you guys saw my whiteboard video the other day, the inverted yield curve has predicted with 100% certainty, or with a 100% success rate of is predicted the next recession. So when we get an inverted yield curve going back to the 1950s, we get a recession 100% of the time. But what's also interesting is that we have never had a recession without an inverted yield curve preceding it, going back to the 1950s. So it's not to say that it's impossible, but it's highly, highly unlikely. So if you're someone like me that's worried about a recession due to the things, among other things, what we talked about in this video, what you have to watch is that 10-year treasury. So Fed raising rates, if the 10-year treasury is staying around the same, therefore the rate increases at the short end of the curve are going up faster than the rates at the long end of the curve, or the yields, then the probability of recession, very high. But if the Fed starts raising and the 10-year goes up at the same rate, the odds of a recession, very, very low. And just getting that right will help all of us make a lot better financial decisions in 2022 and 2023. But right now, my base case is recession because of everything that we're seeing. My base case is recession if the Fed continues to taper down to zero and raises rates 3 to 4 times, like they're saying, and starts quantitative tightening. Because I think that's when we most likely get an inverted yield curve. But again, no certainties, only probabilities. Guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism, and we'll see you on the next video.